If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. Calling it as it is, you're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, thank you for joining me today here at today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Great to be with you. Shout out to everybody in the interactive live chat room over there at our website, tntradio.live. That's where the episodes archive is. That's where the chat is. That's where all the good stuff is. Our What's On event calendar, everything you need to know. Our email addresses, if you'd like to email me, please do so. Everybody's email addresses are up on their show pages over there at tntradio.live. Got a couple of emails this week already. Thank you for sending those. Carol writes and said, hey, I had a hard time finding Amy's BitChute. I'll get that for you, Carol. I appreciate you flagging that up for me and letting me know. I'll make sure and get you that. So there you go. I do my best to get back at everybody when I get emails. I'm not perfect, but I do my best. Now, let's see here. We've got a great hour lined up here. The Truth Hound, Mark Anderson, is going to be joining, and Corey Drayton, a creative director and professional director of photography, is going to be joining also. We've got a couple of great topics lined up we're going to be discussing. I think we should probably address, though, real quickly, this one. This is interesting. Canada to take the necessary time to probe the Gaza hospital blast. So Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says a review is underway with allied countries to determine the cause of the explosion and fire at a Gaza hospital earlier this week. Trudeau told reporters today that the necessary time would be taken to evaluate what Hamas says has caused the deaths of hundreds of Palestinians. And I'm sure that the G7 bloc will converge on a final analysis there. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I appreciate Trudeau at least saying they're going to take the necessary time. Because this story has just gotten out of hand. My goodness, have you heard the discussions on Twitter Spaces? Are you following any of that? All over the place, you know, you've basically got two narratives there, and it's the errant rocket narrative and the Hamas propaganda narrative, or it's the Israelis that did it. And this is what we're dealing with. They're not leaving us a whole lot of room to do things like take necessary time to probe these events. So it kind of reminds me. It reminds me of after 9/11. This whole environment we're in right now. If you're under the age of, if you're a young person, if you're a millennial or younger, then you missed out on the mass polarization that we experienced in the wake of the events of 9/11. We were basically told by George Bush, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And that, I don't know how well that one sits with everybody in hindsight. Especially our veterans, you know, I've spoken with a number of veterans, had one on the show just this week who was talking about, hey, you know, we were told this and then we got there and we realized you can't paint an entire country as terrorists. We actually worked with some of these people. We got to know them. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit concerning. It's just a little bit concerning that we're back to, you're either with us or you're with them. This whole forcing people into a dialectic when we're being bombarded from all sides with war propaganda. And it's difficult to discern war propaganda from truth when you're not there. So yeah, that's all very, very disturbing. But let's talk about Jim Jordan for a second here. House Republicans are debating whether to introduce a motion to temporarily empower Speaker Pro Temp Patrick McHenry to conduct House business until January. move is backed by Jim Jordan, who chose to do so after his candidacy for speakership lost ground in a second ballot. Third ballot has been scheduled for today, was canceled. So if approved, such a measure would pause the quote-unquote chaos surrounding the speakership race and allow the House to act on urgent matters, including, you got it, determining support for Israel and completing 2024 appropriations before the November 17 deadline. And in other news, we've got misreleased the Kraken here. Sidney Powell pleads guilty in Trump Georgia election case. This is, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Sidney Powell accepted a plea bargain in the Fulton County on the morning, just this morning, October 19th, pleading guilty to six misdemeanors related to election interference in the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. The deal did not require her to plead guilty to the racketeering charge on which she and 18 co-defendants, including former President Donald Trump, were indicted on August 14. She was slated to go to trial in a matter of days on October 23rd after demanding a speedy trial that severed her case from all the co-defendants except attorney Kenneth Chesbro, who also demanded a speedy trial. So here's the terms. All defendants were charged with violating the state's Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. Ms. Powell's additional charges had to do with the removal and use of voting machines in Coffee County. Pretty amazing right there. Absolutely amazing. So what else do we got? This one's interesting. I'll tell you what though, let me remind you before I get to that one, because we get asked these things a lot, and you can follow us. That's right. We're on all the social platforms. So why not give us a follow? We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, Gitter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time.
Drilling down the details.
I feel more informed when I listen.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, this is a little bit interesting. This is out of Epic Times. Philadelphia rally celebrates 420 million Chinese quitting the CCP. Interesting. This one really grabbed my attention. Falun Gong practitioners held a rally in Philadelphia's Chinatown celebrating the more than 420 million Chinese people who have quit the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and its affiliated organizations. This was just 4 days ago. Some local officials showed their support and attended the rally. Pennsylvania State Representative Mary Isaacson issued a citation that highlighted the growing awareness of the CCP's imminent threat to the world and brought attention to the importance of stopping the tyranny of communist China and ending the CCP's global threat. We have this quit the CCP movement from Chinese Americans in Philadelphia. Very, very interesting. Quote, quit the CCP movement has brought to the international community a renewed vision of a world without communism through a peaceful movement, end quote. So, very interesting, goes to show that we can have immigration here in the United States that works and people that are interested in adopting American values, American way of life, concepts of freedom and liberty, and, willing to integrate into society. That is the melting pot we were told about in my youth. So very, very interesting to see that one taking place. Now, I should also point out, I've been talking about this one for a bit. I've got an update on it, though. Senate Republicans are expressing frustration with the Biden administration over its decision to add Acting Secretary of Labor Julie Hsu. Yes, whose nomination to the role was never confirmed to the presidential line of succession. Wow. Big problems there with Julie Hsu, much like Philip Washington, who the Biden administration tried to name as the FAA administrator. and ended up having to step down from that. Didn't actually happen. Didn't make it through the confirmation. And apparently the Biden administration is just going to go ahead and treat Julie Sue as though she was confirmed, which she has not been. And by many people's estimation, is not qualified for the position. In a Tuesday letter to President Biden, Alabama GOP Senator Katie Britt and 29 of her Republican Senate colleagues expressed grave concerns and requested clarification from the administration for its apparent belief that Sue is eligible to assume the office of President of the United States pursuant to the presidential line of succession and established by Congress in the Presidential Succession Act of 1947. So, well, Julie Sue, not a popular choice, definitely not a popular choice. Many people say it is a diversity hire. And yeah, here's a quote for you. As you are well aware, since March 14th, 2023, the United States Senate has declined to confirm Ms. Sue's nomination as Secretary of Labor, and she continues to lack adequate support from both Republican and Democratic members of the Senate to be confirmed to that position. Despite the reality and Ms. Sue becoming the longest ever cabinet nominee to await confirmation in a time when the same party controls the White House and the Senate, the White House has chosen to keep her in place as acting Secretary of Labor on an indefinite basis and has also listed her on the White House website as a member of the cabinet in order of succession to the presidency. So government appears to be running somewhat roughshod on this one, and they are just saying, well, we don't care. You're not going to confirm her. That's okay. We're just going to go ahead and treat her as though she has been confirmed regardless. Absolutely amazing. Overreach, perhaps? Yeah, it sounds like overreach to me. This is The Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Katie Hopkins.
In Paris, there's a infestation. Oh, it's Mickey Beach. Of bed bugs. 1 in 10 have experienced bed bugs in the last 5 years, but there is a puné outbreak in Paris. And so there's kids like on the subway, on the metro, filming the puné crawling over the seats on the Paris transport system. It makes me go all funny. And now Paris City Hall and President Macron are calling for action. It's a measure of how seriously they take the issue and how they need to protect the image de Paris ahead of the 2024 Games. They are not dismissing the bedbug invasion as panic. They are saying it's a real life thing. Scare stories flashing across the internet. People on the metros are now standing up because they don't want to sit down. General psychosis has taken hold.
Katie Hopkins on TNT Radio.
When you can point me to an industry, to a platform that reaches 250 million people a month, virtually 9 out of 10 Americans, that's real, that's substantive, that's important. And that reach and that touch point and that daily reinforcement, it's an amazing place to be able to communicate messages. That's massive.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
If you're talking about it,
the United States of America should never, ever default on its debt.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, oftentimes when there is a conflict or a major global issue, one of the worst places to get information from is the mass media cartel. And one of the interesting places to try to glean information from are the think tanks, NGOs, those that write white papers, these sort of things. And, you know, joining me now is the person that coined that term, which I use often, mass media cartel. He is the founder of thetruthhound.com. He's the host of Stop the Presses on RBN. And he can be found on UK Column Weekly as well. Mark Anderson, what are the think tanks saying about the conflict right now with Israel and Gaza?
Good afternoon, Hesh. I hope I'm coming through clearly.
We've got you.
Okay, yeah, on October 16, that afternoon, I covered virtually online a American Enterprise Institute program that featured former CIA Persian Gulf military analyst Kenneth M. Pollack, P-O-L-L-A-C-K. And the American Enterprise Institute, briefly, is a notoriously neoconservative Washington think tank. Neoconservative meaning that it's pretty much unabashedly pro-Israel. And the main takeaway point from Mr. Pollack, now keep in mind his intelligence background, and he was formerly with the Brookings Institution, a part of that institution called the Sabin Center, S like Sam, A-B-A-N, and that's another pro-Israeli outfit. He bluntly advocated during that program nation building for Gaza. But first, he said, Israel must utterly and totally defeat Hamas and then go ahead and nation build Gaza. So I think what we're seeing here, at least tentatively, is what's in store for Gaza, because these think tanks are basically incubators for policy. I call them the kitchens of the New World Order, and they cook up and moderate and modify arguments and counterarguments and do research and develop white papers, and politicians are pretty much in line with them. The bigger ones, like the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, or the New York CFR, have a lot of current and former journalists in their lineup, a lot of current and former politicians in their lineup. So there's a symbiosis between the think tanks and academia and politics and media, a common watering hole, if you will. And so these ideas go from the kitchens into the main lobby and end up oftentimes influencing or at least massaging legislation. So when we hear a former CIA Persian Gulf military analyst like Kenneth Pollack say something, we need to listen. And he's saying what's in store for Gaza is nation building, but evidently not nation building by the Palestinians, but nation building by the elite. And therefore, any remnants, any leftover, you know, shards of Palestinian self-determination would be highly degraded, in my opinion, if not eliminated altogether. So I think we're getting at least a dress rehearsal for what's in store for Gaza.
And did Mr. Pollack say anything? Did he elaborate on the nature of the nation building project, or did he leave it sort of just, you know, because nation building sounds kind of great to people who don't really know what he might mean by that?
It was left a little bit ambiguous. It wasn't a very long program. There was another speaker, Brian Catulis, or Catulis, however you pronounce it, K-A-T-U-L-I-S. He's a senior fellow and vice president of policy at the Middle East Institute. He was a little bit more sympathetic toward the Palestinian plight and made a couple counterarguments. He a little bit broke the rule about Israel being beyond reproach. But Mr. Pollack, who's Jewish himself, and I don't think that's gratuitous to say that, because when you're talking about this issue, you need to know where people are coming from. But at any rate, Mr. Pollack was pretty unabashedly saying that Hamas needs to be defeated and they need to get down to the business then of nation building. But he did not go into detail. I'm looking through a preliminary article that I wrote here right now. He did say this: building a different Gaza with a different leadership, quote, end quote, building a different Gaza with a different leadership. And then I put here in my own analysis, he floated the idea that there could still be a two-state solution that somehow would be reconcilable with Gaza's foes or their antagonists, Gaza's enemies rebuilding Gaza. Staking his claims on Israel being largely, if not totally beyond reproach, Pollack added, hopefully Hamas will be destroyed. Different models have been used for nation building, quote, parentheses, with the UN as a likely participant, And then Mr. Pollack added, it will take a long time, end quote.
That's one of the things that has a lot of people concerned right now, Mark, is what does this all actually mean? I noticed yesterday, I think it was, there was a comment by an IDF spokesperson, and they were saying maybe a ground invasion of Gaza will not be the next phase in our war. I'm paraphrasing, but phase in our war was actually a quote that was used there. And, you know, I'm looking around the Middle Eastern segment right now, and I'm seeing, you know, there's appears to be fighting in Syria, or at least munitions falling in certain places in Syria, Lebanon, the Egyptian border. I think there was a border crossing zone. So I don't know. Do you think that, did you get any clues from the American Enterprise Institute program here with regards to maybe larger goals when they talk about our war?
Not to a great deal, although this might not be a direct answer to your question. Kenneth Pollack, he said that the risks of escalation, the escalation of hostilities, he believes the risks of escalation are lower than many believe. And you were saying that a ground invasion still has not happened. Did I hear you correctly?
Well, there was some talk on Tuesday about a ground offensive being imminent. There were 380,000 Israeli reservists called to the ready. But then one of their spokespeople came out and said, well, that may not be the next move in our war. So he did not say what the next move would be, but it made it kind of, to me, just reading it and hearing it made me think, oh, okay, well, what would the next move be if it's not inside of the Gaza Strip? You know, it's like they're telling us that's where the Hamas people are that they want to eliminate, right?
Yeah. It is a little nebulous at this point in that regard. Again, Pollack thinking that escalating hostilities is less likely than many believe, although he didn't substantiate as to why he said that. And he also added some sundry points. Iran at this time, he believes, is reluctant to mess with Israel or mess with the Mossad. And he added, however, that Hamas, in his estimation, Mr. Pollack, will, quote, fight to the last Palestinian and to the last Hezbollah. They're going to do that, he said, quote unquote. And he added some other sundry items. Iran did not order Hezbollah to join in the initial attack against Israel, reported to have happened on October 7th. And he further said that while Hezbollah may assume it can inflict enough casualties to get Israel to back down, that Lebanese paramilitary wing known as Hezbollah, he said, is no match for the Israeli army. Although I recall reading, it might have been 2006, I'm being a little bit speculative here, that there was one time when Hezbollah directly took on the Israeli forces and Hezbollah came out on top and in fact kind of whipped them. I don't know that that's true, but I think people underestimate Hezbollah as being a organized military force. But we don't want to get into tactics or, you know, us versus them in that regard. But another thing I'll mention briefly is that the other speaker, Mr. Catulus, however you say it, now both him and Mr. Pollack have both served on the National Security Council. So there's always been a revolving door between a lot of these think tankers and the National Security Council, which is an interesting connection. But he likened the date of the reported initial attack on Israel to America's 9/11. In other words, what happened on 10/7 was Israel's 9/11. And we've heard that before, but they kind of cemented that point at this program. So basically, we're just getting kind of an initial whiff here of what's going on. There were some other miscellaneous claims and whatnot, but they want a different Gaza with a different leadership. And nation building in the past has been done by the conquerors, by the prevailing forces. such as nation building in Germany after World War II ended, and that completely reoriented Germany and put U.S. forces in Germany at military bases permanently, which are there to this day. So
yes.
one outcome of nation building could be that there'll be much more of a military presence right in Gaza. By no means is that assured, but if history's any teacher, then maybe there'd be a permanent military occupation of Gaza in the form of Israeli military outposts or something like that. That's very speculative, but I'm trying to use history as a teacher. So,
yeah, well, we got to do that, especially when we're trying to deconflict all the media flack coming at us right now. I have a headline inbound here, but on the other side of the headline, Mark, I want to ask you about the media environment right now. It seems very much to me, I first recoiled at the idea of this being like 9/11, but now I'm starting to say, well, it is like 9/11 in the sense that in the media and social media environment right now, there seems to be this George Bushian, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists sort of vibe going on for anyone calling for a cessation of violence, humanitarian corridors, anything like that. So I think that's interesting, and I'd love to get your comments on that right after this headline with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Check this out!
News Talk Radio.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. There are even more hostages than first thought, all being held captive in Gaza. 203 families have been notified that their loved ones are being held by Hamas and smaller factions inside Gaza. Intelligence sources indicate there are conversations going on behind the scenes to try and get some of those hostages out before the Israeli ground operation moves forward. Israel has also been hit by rockets from militants in Lebanon, where the U.S. Embassy is urging Americans there to get out as soon as possible.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
TheTruthHound.com is Mark's website. Mark Anderson, what do you think about that? Just the dialectics that we're being handed right now, they feel hauntingly familiar to me. And I think many of our, you know, young people may not have experienced them in the same way that we did. So maybe there's some lessons learned that we can apply in that realm too.
Yeah, I can remember working as a staffer at the South Bend, Indiana Tribune when Oklahoma City went down. And there was a whiff of what you're talking about, not quite as strong as now, but there was this idea that if you didn't believe the government story on Oklahoma City, OKC, then you were a, you know, extremist right-wing militia patriot type thing. And then that's grown to more international dimensions with 9/11. You're either for the war on terror or you're a enemy of the state. Was the general ideological framework that was put up. And of course, the war on terror is so Orwellian. You can't fight terror. Terror is a phenomenon that, like fear. That's like saying you're going to fight hate or you're going to fight gravity. You might fight terrorism. You might fight terrorists, the people that commit acts of terrorism, but there's no such thing as a war on terror. Okay. And so you got to look at the semantics, the linguistics of it. That's when you know they're messing with your mind. And now you're seeing the same basic framework, as you said, that you either have to believe that Israel is literally beyond reproach in every shred of this thing, or you're somehow lurching toward being an enemy of the state or enemy of the world order. And you have to sometimes wonder if that's the whole point of this, wars and rumors of wars, as Orwell wrote about in 1984, if part of the reason that this is done is to demonize the population, to divide people into camps. And it may not be the main reason it's done. Maybe it's just something they take advantage of along the way while other stuff goes down. But yeah, it is very disturbing, and the mass media cartel can be counted on to protect the governments from blowback and to toe the government line almost without question. which means that they're not really the media at all. They're not at all doing what they're supposed to do. And that's why TNT and UK Column exist. They're trying to demonize us while we try to do as best we can the right thing. And so it's very important what we're doing right now talking about this as people jump ship on that mass media cartel anyway.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's very divisive. People are, understandably upset right now. There are topics of history, race, religion that go back, 100 years and more, a lot more in some cases. And, people are just, I hate to see it, Mark. I really hate to see people saying, yeah, I'm on this side, I'm on that side. Instead of just saying, hey, I'm on the side of humanity. Can we just take a pause here? Can we please take a pause, set up some humanitarian corridors and vet the information that we have so we can proceed as a society, I hate to use the term, but a global society. If it's going to turn into a larger conflict, it would sure be nice if we understood all the ins and outs and nuances of the catalyzing events. And Mark, I'm struggling to think of a war or a major conflict that the West has been involved in that did not start with a catalyzing event that was very polarizing, and then in hindsight was very dubious.
Exactly. The tales of German soldiers bayoneting and skewering Belgian babies that were published in the form of illustrations in the newspapers of that time to justify U.S. entry and the expansion of World War I, U.S. involvement in World War II, the so-called surprise attack against Pearl Harbor. It was not a surprise to FDR. Categorically, it was not a surprise. That cannot be stressed enough. And yeah, to this day, the incubators that got us into the early Gulf War, Iraq was just cavalierly killing babies, knocking them out of their incubators or unplugging the incubators because that's what they do, right? They just do that for sport. And then now we hear that Hamas allegedly murdered babies. I'm not saying that it couldn't have happened, but I'm not seeing any convincing evidence that it did happen. So is that another incubator story? Is that another Pearl Harbor, oh, FDR was caught off guard, blarney, right? Lots of blarney going on here. And now we read that a U.S. State Department official did have the guts to resign over military aid to Israel, and he's not anti-Israel, neither am I, okay? But we need to know that all countries are being measured with the same yardstick and that we're getting objective information, which we're not, but this Josh Paul stepped down from his State Department post because he said global arms transfers were way out of proportion. And he supports Israel, but that the U.S. is being way too loose with shipping, just megatons of sophisticated military equipment overseas, far in excess, evidently, of what he thinks is proportionally right. That's sort of the short version of it. But yes, Josh Paul, he was director of congressional and public affairs at the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs. He announced his resignation on LinkedIn in a rare act of public dissent against the Biden administration over the Israeli-Hamas situation. See, so he's a dissenter, and maybe he's hoping other people will, face the music and dissent for principled and honorable reasons. So that's an interesting development.
It is. He said, quote, "I'm leaving today because I believe that our current course with regards to the continued, indeed expanded and expedited provision of lethal arms to Israel, I have reached the end of that bargain." And he went on to say, "Let me be clear. Hamas's attack on Israel was not just a monstrosity. It was a monstrosity of monstrosities," end quote. So, yeah, very interesting to see that one there, Mark. I wonder if he's being called a anti-Semite for this. I also noticed that Rand Paul was the only senator that did not vote yes on that when it hit the Senate floor this week.
Yeah, that must have taken some guts because the pressure with Schumer at the helm must have been enormous. I would not like to have been Rand Paul that day.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a little bit scary to me, though, to see 99 out of 100 senators all say, yes, let's send money, let's send weapons. It's just amazing how these catalyzing events can happen and then just push everything exactly in the direction, of escalation.
Exactly. I don't know how much more time we have here, but it's going to be interesting what happens in the next few days to the next week or so. But there are lots of Jews in Israel that don't agree with Netanyahu's regime, and we don't hear about them either. That's an interesting thing. They don't all think alike, like we're told. There are many that don't believe in the warfare state that defines Netanyahu's reign. And yeah, they don't want this. They don't want the repercussions that come not only from Hamas, but other places. And so that's an interesting thing that doesn't get any real press either. The main thing is we just don't get a balanced, objective view on this from the mass media syndicate / cartel. That's always been sort of the core problem. But we're breaking through that. And day by day, week by week, they're losing while we gain. And that's one of the most important developments of our time.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. That's one of the reasons I love talking with you. We do our best to take the ownership of the narrative away from those syndicates and cartels, or at least inject the questions that need to be asked. So, Mark, again, thetruthhound.com is the website. Stop the Presses on Republic Broadcast Network, UK column, ukcolumn.org. That's where you can find Mark Anderson, sometimes in the boiler room at ACR as well. Mark, thank you for joining me today. Any final thoughts before I have to let you go?
Not really. I think that'll do it. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. Thank you, Mark. That's Mark Anderson, thetruthhound.com, right here on The Brian McClain Show at Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
It's a scary world with scary people. The slaughter of Israeli women and children by a Nazi group called Hamas and the support that they have received on college campuses all around the United States, especially at Harvard. But I want to turn our attention to another issue that has motivated students at one university to organize and march in protest. Are you ready? It seems that some Republicans on campus posted pictures of tampon dispensers that were in full service in the men's bathrooms at the school. That led to the removal of said dispensers, and naturally, according to the Daily Mail, dressed in bright colors while clinging to signs with messages such as, "Hello, it's the 21st century," around 50 students attended the protest calling for the reinstatement of sanitary products in the men's bathrooms. I tell you this, not to take a break from the realities of war or to attempt to force feed you a lighter alternative to what we've been seeing and talking about, I chose this to make sure you don't lose sight of just how screwed up the left in this country is in oh so many ways. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several world leaders and notable multinational corporations now actively promote an energy transformation to so-called clean green hydrogen. Mainstream media will not expose the facts on the hydrogen fuel alternative. Hydrogen is an energy carrier, not an energy source. It requires enormous energy from another source to create it. And this storage of energy in hydrogen is very expensive. It can be compressed or stored chemically at a higher density, such as in metal hydrides. But this is all resource intensive. If you want higher energy bills, hydrogen will help. If you want higher costs of living, hydrogen will help. And burning hydrogen in air is not so environmentally friendly. It may produce emissions with up to 6 times higher levels of toxic nitrogen oxides compared with burning natural gas.
Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Pesher on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, I don't know why Disney has to be such a pillar in our culture, in our society, in our modern mythology, if you will, but it is. So, and it has engaged deeply in the cultural warfare that we are experiencing right now. And, you know, it's, let's face it, it's aimed at kids and families. Disney's content is aimed at kids and families. And their stock, well, their stock has been dropping. And we saw this with Dylan Mulvaney. We've seen this with Bud Light. You know, we keep seeing this whole concept of get woke, go broke, which my next guest actually flips around to go broke, get woke. And he's going to explain that to us a little bit more with regards to Disney's stock war. So joining me now is creative director of photography, author, over 24 years of experience in the television and film industry. He's worked on documentary films, television shows, movies. He's a musician, a philosopher. I added that one in, buddy. He's a commentator, a podcaster, a live streamer, longtime friend of Hunter S. Thompson, and canceled by Hollywood and the Portland scene for his stance against wokeism. And he was featured opposite Peter Boghossian in the independent docuseries The Woke Reformation by Travis Brown, who we've talked to on the program before. Corey Drayton, welcome to the show. It's great to see you. Talk to us a little bit about Disney with regards to this stock war.
Hey, man, thanks for having me back. So where to begin? Well, I'll put it in the parlance of one of Hollywood's major investors. We are living in interesting times. And, you know, what you said at the top of the introduction there, it was really apropos because, yeah, Disney does represent something of the cultural center of the American zeitgeist. And for all the chess players out there, you can think of it like this. There are certain opening strategies that you employ where you try to dominate the center squares on the board. Disney essentially is the center squares on the board. And whoever holds Disney controls the center of perception, because they own so many of the cultural and media outlets. And so it's kind of interesting kind of watching what's going on now inside of Disney. A sort of corporate proxy war is playing out in the boardroom. So what you have going on is this. You've got CEO Bob Iger, who's returned to his previous post as CEO of Disney, ousting Bob Chapek, who was one of the most successful people that Disney has ever had in that position. Why was he successful? Well, because he kept politics and the semiotic arguments of the left out of Disney's programming as much as he possibly could. And he did the most important thing you can do in business, which is make the customers happy. So what's been playing out over the last few months or so and intensified in the last week is this proxy war that is playing out in the boardroom is playing out between Bob Iger and a gentleman by the name of Nelson Peltz, who runs an organization called Trion Fund Management. And Mr. Peltz is a relatively recent newcomer to Disney's investment. He only jumped on board the investment train with Disney in 2022. That was back during the Chapek era. And Peltz is, interestingly enough, kind of something rare in Hollywood. He is more of a conservative. And so his belief was, hey, let's keep these budgets under control. And let's also make sure that we're not introducing too much political messaging into our programming and just making content for everyone, something that everyone can enjoy. The universality of filmmaking and of these Disney properties was something that Peltz really strove to protect. Now, what's occurred is that since Chapek was ousted in something of a corporate coup d'etat by Iger and his compatriots, Peltz was also ousted as well. And Peltz has been moving behind the scenes, talking to other Disney shareholders, looking at Disney's plummeting share price, which seems to be rocketing back to earth faster than anyone would have predicted. Indiana Jones 5 was a flop. The recent Star Wars Ahsoka show that came out was also a flop. And the market has been speaking for some time. People are losing interest in Disney's properties. So Peltz is arguing what any sensible investor would argue. Hey, we don't like what you're doing, and we think that you are neglecting your fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders. If you don't turn the ship around, we're going to take things over. And so certain moves have played out in the Disney boardroom over the past week, and Peltz now owns an estimated $2.5 billion worth of shares in Disney. You would think that ownership of that magnitude would give him some influence in terms of Disney's programming. Interestingly enough, what a lot of people don't know is that Iger is backed by BlackRock and Vanguard, who both have a massive stake in Disney at this time.
Well, that explains a lot with regards to the BlackRock and Vanguard factor there. Pretty amazing to think that somebody could hold or be, you know, managing 2.5 billion in shares and have no voice. I mean, is he allowed in the boardroom? I mean, how does this work? So Peltz is not actually, he's just on the board, right? He's not part of, you know, he's not employed by Disney. How does that actually work?
So he's waging a proxy war because at this time, he's not actually on the board yet. He is on another board called Restore the Magic, which are the board that are principally arguing that under Iger's leadership, Disney is losing its stock value to the degree that it is failing in its fiduciary responsibilities. Peltz is now arguing to have multiple seats on Disney's board so that he can more directly influence Disney's operational policy and influence the projects that are greenlit and the messaging or lack thereof that is included in those projects. Now, what's interesting too about the current Disney board is you could call it a nepotistic hive of scum and villainy, because there are certain members on that board who have no history of even working in entertainment. This is something that the general public largely is not aware of. And so it seems to me that apart from individuals like Peltz and his compatriots, who I certainly support, there should be people sitting on the board who at least know their A to Z regarding entertainment in the first place.
And how, just, I mean, it sounds patently absurd, but how rare is that to have a situation like that where you've got people that do not have experience in entertainment having that sort of influence over arguably the biggest, you know, cultural influencer we have for children and families?
Rare enough. I mean, I would say that that sort of nepotistic practice is far more common at smaller studios and smaller shops. But for something on the scale of Disney, it should absolutely not be the case that people who are on that board have no backup understanding or experience in the entertainment industry. So it's really interesting to delve into how they got there in the first place.
Oh, I'm sure the family trees and the cork board with the push pins and the strings would be a very enlightening project if you were to go through everybody's LinkedIn and make all the connections and check that all out. I think, you know, one could really have some enjoyment there learning all those connections. You know, what about BlackRock and Vanguard? I mean, these are two holding companies, two investment banking entities that seem to have no problem bankrolling major Fortune 100 brands and properties at a loss. And we do know a little bit about their corporate structure and corporate philosophies, if you could call them that.
That we do. It is interesting to kind of monitor the degree to which they're investing heavily in the Disneys of the world, because, you know, you and I both know, as we've discussed on the backline over the past few months, what BlackRock and Vanguard are trying to achieve, what ideological positions they support. Follow the money has never been more true. I think that the market definitely doesn't believe in Bob Iger. I think that the collapsing Disney share price has established that. But the real question is, does that still matter if BlackRock and Vanguard believe in Bob Iger? So what is the degree to which those entities are willing to prop up Bob Iger and keep him in his current position? I do remember a couple of years ago, back in the right after the coup d'etat, they were reporting that Bob Iger was even being groomed or considered for a presidential run. So this is someone who artificially has been inflated as something of a media darling. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and how this impacts what he ends up doing next. The mass media cartel do seem to be telegraphing a Bob Iger exit. They're running headlines very frequently about his exhaustion and overwhelm. So I don't know that that means that he gets to stay in his current position.
Interesting. You know, if you follow the Marvel or the Star Wars zeitgeist on YouTube, for example, there's a lot of presenters there. You know, I could probably point to Geeks and Gamers as maybe the number one, who do a very good watchdog sort of position in all of this. I find their participation, and not just them, but, you know, others like them, I find these levels of participation very interesting. It's sort of a thorn in the side of, you know, Disney, if you will, because they take a very pragmatic, honest, and brutal approach to analyzing the, you know, the cultural milieu that comes along with modern productions in the Marvel and Disney properties, which are full of problems. I mean, not only the stock, you know, hitting the deck, but also that sort of zeitgeist online, you know, and there's the Gina Carano incident, there's matters of cancellation, there's the drag queen Cinderella's and Snow White's, you know, trouncing around Walt Disney World and Disneyland. This is, what do you think about that cultural aspect, like the fan base? Like what role does the fan base play?
I absolutely love the cultural aspect of all this. I mean, Disney have created an entire cottage industry of online commentators on YouTube. I mean, you named off Geeks and Gamers. There's also Gary over at Nerdrotic. There's Victor Van Doomcock. There's Razorfist. On and on and on. And it's amazing because really what we have now is something that's unprecedented in the studio era. There used to be a time when they could kind of gatekeep the journalistic commentation on their properties. They can't do that anymore. Now, anybody can fire up a YouTube channel. Anyone can have an opinion on these properties. And our nature and relationship to them has shifted and changed. And it does rankle and irritate some of the studio execs. I mean, there's instances where I believe it was in She-Hulk. I don't watch any of these things. I just know people that do. I think She-Hulk tried to take a shot at Doomcock at one point by making a villainous character in the show in his likeness. So they're definitely succeeding. They're getting through to these studio execs, and it's absolutely magnificent to watch. It is, I think, one of the positive cases for democratizing entertainment. And I watch a lot of their contents frequently. I haven't interacted with many of them personally. I would certainly like to. But if any of them are listening, I encourage them to carry on. They are making a difference. They're getting under the skins of the right people. And I think we'll see a sea change in the entertainment industry going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in our last minute and a half or so, what do you think about the difference in longevity of the products? Like, I think back to when you and I were young, and it's like a lot of the Disney properties and movies and shows and ideas from then, they still are valuable in some ways. They still have that family-oriented vibe and a lack of, you know, politics and cultural manipulation. It seems to me that the current batch, you know, for young people is not going to have the staying power of, like, you know, Empire Strikes Back, for example.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, Empire Strikes Back was the very first film I ever saw in a movie theater. And there was a time when you could only see these things by actually going to the movie theater and sitting down and watching them. I mean, I remember when we first got a Betamax machine and eventually VHS, I wore the tapes out because I wanted to watch it every morning. You know, it's interesting what's kind of happened with all this, because now we're living in an era where they're not making shows and movies, they're making content. They're just trying to fill the space. And so I think because of that, yeah, there has been a decline in longevity. There's also been a decline in universality. They're not interested in appealing to the universal humanity. They're interested in playing to a very specific ideological and political base. And that is also hurting their longevity and definitely hurting them in the pocketbook.
Yes, absolutely. And the stock war shall continue. This is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. Thank you, Corey Drayton, for joining us and helping break this down. We'll do it again when there's further updates. I want to remind you to pick up The Invisible Machine. The book is out now, documentary coming soon. And go back, if you missed my last talk with Mr. Drayton, go back and check that out, because that's some really valuable information in there in that book. And that's it. That's it for this episode of The Brian McClain Show. Thank you once again, Corey Drayton. Thanks, all my guests. Thank you, Luke, Kimberly, TNT Radio, and you for listening right here on today's News Talk.